Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
No?
Am I supposed... No. I'm trying to...
Is there someone we're missing?
I think you might be missing
old
John
Kellen,
Mackey.
Old Kellen, okay. Winslow.
He mentioned old Kellen. Yep.
Oh, pardon me.
It's okay.
No, John Mackey was an extraordinary tight end.
Antonio
too.
Gates.
You never saw him. Antonio Gates would
Antonio
be on that.
Gates.
It's a short list, though, and Kittle's right there with all of them.
Tony Gonzalez.
The point is, you don't get embarrassed if you throw his name in the pot. You're not being accused of recency bias or homerism.
888-957-9570. Damon Ratto and Kolsky as we move into our 4 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Michael Irvin will be joining us in just a minute. We're looking forward to our weekly conversation with him. Meanwhile, I don't know if you guys heard the walk-off Jets field goal in Spanish yesterday. You should have.
I'd like para darle a los Jets la victoria. Balón en órbita. Sí, señor. Sam Finken cobra el gol de campo y los Jets ganan el partido. 22-21. Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad. Speaking of Feliz Navidad, I want to invite everybody to come and join us at the Guardsman Tree Lot.
I'm excited for this.
Wednesday, we're going to be out at the Guardsman Tree Lot on Wednesday. It's at the Fort Mason Festival Pavilion down in Fort Mason, and it is a veritable winter wonderland. We're going to be doing our entire show from down there. On Wednesday, we're going to be giving away free Christmas trees and wreaths to randomly selected people who will pop in and say hello. Bring your kids, bring your babies. Ray Ratto will be signing babies' foreheads all afternoon.
With an architect's pen.
Yeah, it's going to be a great, great day. We look forward to seeing you, hopefully, down at the Guardsman Tree Lot. It's a great place to pick up all you need. One-stop shopping for your holiday needs. And, by the way, all of that money goes on to help Bay Area at-risk youth. It is a worthwhile cause. It's near and dear to my heart. It's going to be a good show coming up on Wednesday. We're going to have ourselves a hell of a conversation with Michael Irvin when he does join us. I told you we'd go back out to the phone lines, though. 888-957-9570. Rodney, Oak Grove. Hello, Rodney.
Yeah, I'm calling from Elk Grove. I just want to wish you guys a happy holiday.
Thank you.
I have two questions for you. I want to know if after this year, is Kyle Shanahan and Jed York, I mean, Kyle Shanahan and Lynch get a contract extension? And I'm kind of scared of history. What if same thing's going to happen to Jed York? You know, like what they did with Jim Harbaugh.
No, I think...
You mean to Shanahan?
Yeah, I think lessons were learned, and there is a much, much different animal in Kyle Shanahan walking the hallways than when it was Jim Harbaugh.
I think it's less lessons learned than it is just different personality. I mean, Harbaugh, whatever you think of him as a coach and however you may feel about Jed's decision to dismiss him as a coach, Harbaugh every day was trying to piss just about everybody off.
It was a handful.
Yeah, and Kyle Shanahan's not like that. And as far as extensions, I don't think it's time for that yet. They got 3 years after this one.
Right. You know, you usually get extended 3 years out.
No. The other thing is that Kyle Shanahan already has all the things that Jim Harbaugh ever wanted, which was total control of the football operation.
Right.
And, you know, yes, Jim Harbaugh was, you know, a couple of face cards shy of a full deck, and he did like to live in chaos, but the things that he wanted were all things that Kyle Shanahan got.
And that may be the
original.
Lesson. That may be the lesson that was learned, was Jed realizing, I need a GM and coach who work in concert and not against each other.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's very much what he learned, which is why he gave John Lynch a contract that he didn't either had, I think, the skill at the beginning or the leverage to ask for.
Certainly not the resume.
And look, I don't want to get too sappy here, but there was something that happened in that locker room yesterday that officially goes a long way to keeping relationships together. Because what is a very cold, professional, results-based business turned into yesterday something very personal for the York family. Dr. John York was in that locker room, and I don't know if you heard this. I don't know if you know this. A year ago yesterday, the Yorks lost their eldest son, Tony York, due to suicide. I really didn't know that he was yet another sad story of suicide. I knew that he had passed away. I had heard that there had been some demons there, but I never really knew about it. And then, you know, I got to tell you, out of sight, out of mind. I didn't think about it. And then the 49er suicide that would be in the center of our radar is what happened to Solomon Thomas. So, you know, our attention moved elsewhere. Yesterday was a very emotional day for the York family. Let's be honest. The York family, I don't think, has done a very good job being a relatable family for an awful lot of 49ers fans. Yesterday, there was more emotion from a genuine place of sadness and remorse and trying to put behind you a family tragedy. I would like to play for you Dr. John York's emotional thank you to the 49ers. They gave the York family, all of them, the five game balls. I'm going to let Kyle Shanahan explain this and what happened, and then I'm going to turn it over to Dr. John York. Please give this your full attention.
Proud of you guys, and so pumped we can be a part of this team. Guys, every game's been different. All right, I feel like we've been through every type of game this year possible. We haven't. All right, we got a different type of game today. All right, guys, whatever happened, man, you guys rise to the challenge and got it done. All right, I don't care how we do it, man. You guys found a way. We talked about it yesterday. This was a special day, all right, for a number of reasons. All right, we knew how important this game was, all right, but we also knew how important this was to our team, all right, and to the Yorks. All right, they had heavy, heavy hearts today, man. We know what they've been through for the last year. All right, and I promise you, all right, Doc, all right, Jed, all right, I promise you, he's down watching today, man, and I guarantee you, he. I know there's five of you guys, man, but five game balls here. It's for Jenna, Mara, all right, Jed. All right, Denise and Dot here and Dr. York, but we love you guys and we appreciate you guys.
Again, a very heavy heart day for the York family. Here is what John York said in that locker room when Kyle Shanahan handed him a game ball.
Guys, I got to say, obviously we know why we're getting these game balls. I wished I never had one. And we could not have done this without all of you. The coaches were terrific. Jimmy, this is the best game you've ever played. George, great at the end. Robbie, thank you. So congratulations. This is all of us. So thank you. And Kyle, John, everybody, thank you.
There was an awful lot of emotion in that locker room yesterday, and this is a sport where emotion can either betray you or it can galvanize you. And if you were asking yourself, like, what is the little something more special you could put on this year, is to start personalizing it like that. I think the 49ers became a closer family who are going to play harder for each other tomorrow as opposed to just yesterday. And yesterday was pretty special. That was an emotional moment in a locker room that we very are given any access to. And it's something else that the Niners really let that out and that cameras were allowed to film that. That was a very personal moment.
And it's a personal moment that I think it's hard to view cynically.
You can't.
I mean, that's a father who lost his son, you know, having actual emotion overflow out of him. And it's hard for me to even wrap my mind around what he must be going through. But I do think that's a big deal.
It's also a measure of how Shanahan and Lynch get their place in the organization, because there are times when you have to stop being the football guy. And we were talking about Jim Harbaugh earlier. I don't know if that was one he could have done.
No.
And it's not because they butted heads. Just Jim Harbaugh was monomaniacal about the football. And even though this probably was sort of an easy decision for Shanahan to make, it was also a decision that had to be made because you work for people, and if you don't get to know them, you'll miss things like this. And I'm not trying to be cynical about it. You won't take the time to know how important Game X is to the people you not only work for, but work with. So, you know, it just, it surprises me in no ways, because I think Shanahan is more aware of the outside world around him than maybe anybody going back to George Seifert in terms of 49er coach.
And I think that actually does stand out among football coaches generally. Like a lot of the, maybe not Harbaugh level, but a lot of these guys are maniacally focused, are sort of tough to even talk with on issues outside the game. And Kyle Shanahan, I think, is more well-rounded than most.
Well, look, Jim Harbaugh had one quirk in his personality that ended at his khaki pants.
Yeah.
And he didn't even really want to talk about that. Kyle Shanahan is ready to talk rap.
Yeah.
Like Kyle Shanahan is ready to talk about the music he likes, the other interests he has, the personal relationships that he's made throughout his life, where there's nothing but football that marks the spot with so many guys having well-rounded, having some compassion. It's a good thing. And it helps bring a team together. Again, that was a truly emotional moment coming from a locker room yesterday, and I wanted to share it with you. We are hoping that Michael Irvin is around the corner. He's one of our favorite conversations. He's normally supposed to join us at 4 o'clock. We didn't catch up with him in this segment. We will try to do it next. If not, then the one after that. If not, then the one after that. We're basically going to be looking forward to talking to Michael Irvin between now and 5:30. Because that's the time that we have open at 5:30. Cam Inman's supposed to join us at 6 o'clock tonight. We're going to get you out to Warriors Live, so make sure you stay tuned. An awful lot still coming up here. All of it brought to you by Cresco Equipment Rentals. Starting a home improvement project can be intimidating. When you go to Cresco Express locations, they will help you find the right tools and show you how to use them. If you need it, Cresco's got it. For more information, go to CrescoRent.com. Damon Ratto and Kolsky. You're on 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
It is a Monster Monday here on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by Benjamin Moore Paints. Paint like no other, and by Dolan Lumber, Windows, and Doors. In terms of paintings, if yesterday's game were a painting, you put that in the Museum of Regular Season Football, and you will go back and remember that one for a long, long time. And if this season ends in, you know, Super Bowl 54, that thing gets on permanent display. That game goes into the Louvre of your football memories. It was so much fun. It was just an outstanding A-plus afternoon where it didn't feel like anybody lost. It didn't feel like anybody played poorly. It just was outstanding football, and the team that got to touch it last ended up winning. Thank God the Niners got to touch it last. There were so many delicious moments in that game. I mean, I guys, Ray Ratto, Matt Kolsky, I'm just going to start going through delicious moments. You can stop the wheel to talk about whichever one of these catches your fancy. Rank them, don't rank them, whenever you're feeling, whenever you got an itch to scratch, you just cut me off and you get into it. How about the fact that the Saints should have buried the 49ers alive at least twice early in that game? Like, that was on the table. You got that Cook touchdown that looks like it might not have been caught. The ball was rocking a little bit. Cook had a concussion on that play. He didn't play again after that play, which is probably a good thing because he was off to a spectacular start. You had special teams for the 49ers getting gashed early and often. having Raheem Mostert in your backfield absolutely robs coverage on special teams a little bit, but that's a deal you're willing to make. The Saints scored four first-half touchdowns and trailed at halftime. I mean, there is no scenario where you look at Drew Brees' numbers. Like, if you just opened up the box score and the box score didn't include the final score, Drew Brees put up the kind of numbers that equal you automatically lose every time. Like, Drew Brees going 29 of 40 for 349, an average of 8.7 yards per pass. Five touchdowns, no picks, no sacks.
And that shorts him a touchdown because he also ran one in.
It's an unsurvivable Drew Brees event, except until yesterday.
Well, most of that can be credited to the fact that the 49ers' three scores came an aggregate of 4 minutes and 50 seconds after the New Orleans scores.
Yeah.
They scored immediately so that the leads that the Saints enjoyed, they weren't able to actually enjoy them. They had them for a moment, and then it was a football game again. And that was the difference.
And it was the lightning quick score, the Emmanuel Sanders large touchdown. The quick scores meant New Orleans wasn't resting their defense, just getting ready to come back out and make stops. Not even close. No defense was really able to make a stop on the afternoon. You had huge answers. You had the fumble recovery. You had stolen possessions by both teams in this game. The interception that was more on Emmanuel Sanders than was on Jimmy Garoppolo. I thought that might have been the entire game right there. That was early third quarter. The stop after that, which held the Saints to just a field goal. I even remember tweeting. I said, this is the biggest moment in the game that you'll never talk about the rest of your life. Holding the Saints to a field goal right there was as big of a defensive possession as this team has had all year. We've been talking about this game since what? The morning show came on, Steve Langford up and early at 5 a.m. I doubt even one person has brought this up yet today. It's as big of a moment defensive football as you'll find all season, any team. Weston Richburg gets carted off. Like, that's a significant enough injury to lose you a football game right there. You then survive that fake punt. That fake punt was scary as hell.
Yep.
That fake punt, I mean, know your rule book. Know that you can run through that gunner without pass interference. That's an awful lot better than letting him catch it. Oh, my God. God, that moment right there, you survived the fake punt. Everybody stayed on assignment. Everyone knew the rules for the moment. A dropped game-ending interception by Witherspoon, which was, I tweeted like, oh, he didn't just drop an interception. He dropped a bye week and a home playoff game. That's how big of a not interception that was. I thought game over, except I didn't think about the one avenue to victory that was still there for the Niners. That was let them score. Let them score as quickly as possible. And I don't think they were trying to do that.
No.
That's just what happened. And all of a sudden, after Drew Brees hits Traquan Smith to cap a 7-play, 76-yard scoring drive, you're chasing 2 points all afternoon, which, oh, by the way, I haven't even brought up yet. The Saints decided to chase 2 points all afternoon for a reason. I don't know. 53 seconds. And a timeout. That's what Garoppolo was doing. Three timeouts. And then they even blow a timeout right before the Kittle play, which will define George Kittle all the way to the point where we're writing his obituary one day. That's probably going to go into the opening paragraph. That's how big of a play that was for George Kittle. It was an all-timer. Drew Brees scores too quick. Kittle makes the biggest play of his career. And again, he has had as decorated a career, a third-year tight end, is available, and that's the best moment he's ever had. Did I leave anything out?
Well, you never said the words Robbie Gould,
oh,
who you've been savaging all year. I mean, those were two. I mean, the 41-yarder was a pretty high-pressure kick.
Did you think he was going to get that game winner? I mean, I was.
From 30? Yeah. You cut him if he can't kick a 30-yarder in that situation.
Yeah. Inside, I agree.
No, but I disagree with the notion that, you know, that the Saints couldn't go for two at the end. They had to go for two. They needed it to be three if at all possible.
Sure.
So I didn't have a problem with any of their choices in terms of going for two whenever, because they didn't do it the whole game. They did it in two spots where there was a reason to do it. And the first one was early on when they scored the second touchdown, because, again, like a lot of coaches do now, Sean Payton saw a clear metric advantage to trying to force a wide lead that they could defend. Their problem was they did force a couple of wide leads, but they didn't have time to defend them. But I didn't have a problem with either two-point attempt from them.
I think the if you're looking for delicious stuff, how about the fact that the 49ers were dominated in time of possession for most, if not all, of the first half, and still ended up with a 28-27 lead? I mean, we talked about the quick strike touchdowns, and that's how you do that, but ordinarily, when you're dominated in time of possession, that's bad, especially when you're a team in the Niners that sort of built some of this 11-2 record on time of possession and having the football and running it. Again, it's just it's winning in a way that's different from all the other ways you've won, and it's really impressive.
Emmanuel Sanders, that passing touchdown, I mean, that's Lynch and Shanahan coming together to give this team a lever to pull that it might need to pull to win a football game. It was a great move. It was executed by good talent, and it's not something that happens very often. As a matter of fact, Emmanuel Sanders is the first player in modern NFL history since 1950 with a passing touchdown and a receiving touchdown in the same game. Like, I can't even believe that. Really? Did we get that right?
Yeah. I think there have only been eight touchdowns, I heard this morning. Eight touchdowns thrown by non-quarterbacks in 49er history.
Sanders and Odell Beckham Jr. are the only active players who have multiple games with a passing touchdown and a receiving touchdown.
See, I was sure that I'd seen this before from Emmanuel Sanders, and then I looked at his stats and I didn't see it, but who knows?
Maybe you were just high.
It's possible.
I think the word likely is what you're trying to grope for here.
Yeah, here it is. Okay, so 2018 he's Emmanuel Sanders. You want his career passing numbers?
Give them to me.
3 for 3.
Money.
78 yards and 2 touchdowns. He's got a touchdown percentage of 66.7.
That's the ratio you're looking for.
That's good.
Yesterday, Emmanuel Sanders on his touchdown pass.
We ran it like 5 times. The last time we ran it, I actually threw a duck. And I was like, man, don't throw a duck in the game because that's going to be on ESPN, not top 10. I was able to execute it today. And after, you know, I threw the pass, you know, I know Kyle was like, please don't throw a duck again. And so after I threw it, I saw he caught it. I just put my hands up like, yeah, that felt good. Because it was one of the plays when I went into this game, I was like, man, like, please be a touchdown. So it feels good to be standing up here, you know, scoring.
Emmanuel Sanders. Monster play out of him. The monster play, though, that everyone was talking about was given to us by George Kittle. He just absolutely put the entire city of New Orleans on his back and ran another 20 yards. He was unbelievable. The play was so special. Kyle Shanahan was talking about it afterwards, as was everyone.
I mean, I think he means a ton. I mean, everyone knows how good of a player he is, but when one of your best players has the mentality he has, I mean, that changes everything. I kind of always say that old linemen don't have a choice. They got to be tough down in, down out. But the mentality of your offense on how tough a team you are has to do with your skill positions. And I think our skill guys, you know, with Debo, you know, and Bourne and Manuel, they've been playing very physically. Kittle's as physical of a tight end there is in this league on run plays and the pass plays. And I think those guys have been able to match our line and give us a pretty tough mentality here over the season.
Jimmy Garoppolo on the Kittle play.
Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang.
Once he caught it and turned upfield and squared the guy up, I didn't know what he was going to do. I knew the guy was in a bad situation on the other side, but George, he's a beast with the ball in his hands, so it's just get him the ball in space and let him go work, and, you know, he did the rest.
It was a day where you couldn't stay conservative. You had to risk it. Kyle Shanahan said he was ready to.
Yeah, we knew we were going to have to do some things like that because it's a very, very sound defense. And when you go against a sound defense like that has the players they do and is coached up that well, they make you go on a lot of long drives. And so, you know, we knew we had to take some risks to try to get some explosives. And you try to make them calculated, but sometimes they hit. Sometimes there's a risk we took that didn't work. So there's a number that did work, and you got to do that versus a good team like that.
I just realized when Kyle mentioned him, another guy we didn't really mention, Kendrick Bourne. That's as big a three-catch, 18-yard day as anyone will ever have because two of them were touchdowns and the third one was a huge first down on a third down play. And that guy has really developed a knack for making the big catch.
Kendrick Bourne is drifting into the Chris Carter, all he does is catch touchdowns criticism phase of his career.
Yeah, they might keep him.
And he gets to stay.
Look at this. If you are going to war with George Kittle, Emmanuel Sanders, Deebo Samuel, and Kendrick Bourne as your pass catchers, I think you feel really good about yourself. And think of how far a cry that is from how we felt about the wide receiving core week one.
Oh, well, when it was Marquise Goodwin and Dante Pettis,
yeah.
Jordan Matthews was your like hold your breath and hope.
And you know, for the purposes of accuracy, nobody here was very keen on Bourne either.
No.
He was part of the they have nobody they can trust.
That's right.
Kendrick Bourne has scored 5 touchdowns in his last 6 weeks. That is sustainable. This is Caesar calling from Hayward. Caesar, hello.
Hey, how you doing? So going back to the tight end situation, what's your comparison with Vernon Davis and, of course, the best tight end now, George Kittle?
That had no comparison.
Yeah, I mean, Vernon Davis was really good. Vernon had more big play capability probably than any Niner tight end before him.
Great speed, great size.
Yeah, top line athlete in many, many ways. He got hit by Cam Chancellor in Seattle and was really never the same guy again. I don't think that's ever going to happen to George Kittle. As a matter of fact, I think George Kittle's going to be the guy who delivers the hit that retires somebody almost mentally, not the other way around. He's everything that you would go into the lab to create at the position.
And not just what you said about the hit part of it, but I mean, Vernon was never that level of blocker. He just wasn't.
Oh, God, no.
And I think that's what separates, you know, people have been throwing other names at the text line that we should have had in our, you know, Mark Bavaro and Travis Kelce. And I think the fact that
Vernon was a finesse tight end.
Exactly. The fact that Kittle is not only the best receiving tight end, but also the best blocking tight end, that's Gronk. That's what that is.
Yeah. You throw out the first 5 years of Davis's career because they were on a series of terrible teams. And they used him in such a way. They targeted him 1 year 128 times, which is elite wide receiver number.
Yeah.
And I think at that point, he sort of decided.
By design or circumstance, though? That was circumstance.
Well, both. But yeah. The point is, if you get targeted that many times, your team is telling you, your job is to go out and catch the ball.
And he did have 13 touchdowns that year.
Yeah, no, it was not a bad year, but yeah. they sort of made it clear through his usage that they viewed him as a pass-catching tight end. And then Jim Harbaugh came and said, well, no, we want you to block because we're trying to establish the run now. And I think, in part, that was an adjustment that Davis couldn't make right away, or at least didn't. And by the time he did, the Chancellor play happened, and all of a sudden he was a much different player.
It's odd, but they should have kept Delanie Walker.
Yep.
Yeah. But they, you know, again, why would you keep two really vital tight ends? Because Delanie Walker was sadly misused here. With the way Tennessee has used him for the most part is the way he should have been used, as a threat.
Yep.
Well, and, you know, I mean, maybe this is just the inability to understand who you are and what you're best at.
Or find a guy who could do multiple things the way tight ends used to have to do 40 years ago.
Bill Belichick knew what to do when he had two tight ends. I mean, Aaron Hernandez, you know, we all know what happened, but Aaron Hernandez and Jimmy Garoppolo, Rob Gronkowski was the other guy for a minute there.
For a minute. But when you are gifted a generational player at a position, if you can't figure out what to do with him right away, you deserve all the crap that's going to be thrown at you. Belichick does not let guys like that flounder.
Yeah, and I don't know if this played into the decision-making, but there was also a small incident of gunfire at a party that I believe Delanie Walker was at least in attendance for, if not a participant in.
I don't believe he was a participant.
But it was, I think it was Ahmad Brooks who was the participant. But
yeah.
But Walker was there, and I'm not saying that was a reason, but it may have played a part.
I cannot imagine that they would have gotten rid of Delanie Walker for that. I just don't think they understood what they had in him and never used him.
No,
in
they
a way
never
that
did.
He could be that effective.
To that point, he caught a total of 31 passes over the 2-year stretch before he left.
Yeah, so they had this. They'd made up their minds on him.
Fred, out on the highway. Hello, Fred.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to talk about the severity of that face mask. Shouldn't there have been a flagrant or possible ejection of the player? And then towards the end, with a second tackler just jumped over and tried to just, I don't know, injure him, I guess.
No, Fred, look, when you can't bring the guy down, it's pile on. And the face mask to Kittle was very much in the flow of a football play. There is a 15-yard consequence there, but there was no personal foul, unnecessary roughness attached to it.
I wouldn't assume that. What I thought was he did not intentionally grab the face mask.
That's what I mean. There was
all
not
right.
intent.
Yeah, there was not thing, intent, though. But they would throw a flag on that.
Sure.
And truth is, I think at that point of the game, the 49ers were not at all focused on how do we get this penalty. They were focused on let's get the ball into a place where we can kick a field goal and get the hell out of here.
It's also the best kind of face mask that you can take if you're the victim of the face mask. The pulling down.
Yeah, it's much better than side.
Your chin to your chest is a much more easier move for you to get through than getting yanked to where you're now looking out your ear hole.
Yeah, I think if they had more time, they'd have made much more of a case about it. But they were at that point, I think they said, we need the field goal. Let's just get out of here.
Do they, is that something they do? Would there be an extra penalty? I mean, I think it's 15,
could call,
right?
No, you could call two penalties on the same play.
You could call a face mask and an unnecessary roughness for the same face mask?
Oh, no. You can't, no, because that falls into the same thing.
Right. So, I think his...
Right, one penalty would cancel out the other if you were trying to call two.
So I think that's how it would have gone. And the texter says, well, you didn't let go of the face mask, but that's what makes it a 15-yard face mask penalty. If you let go, they're not supposed to call it at all anymore, actually, I don't think.
Well, again, you're asking you're asking
they
for
might.
Things that you can't be guaranteed. I think at that point they were far more focused on get the field goal team on. Let's get this done because I don't want to spend a lot of time arguing about John Barry and John Perry and how we're going to do this.
The only way that the 49ers could have gone on to win that game is by getting the ball back with enough time to operate. And they got it. It's amazing. Drew Brees is guilty of shredding the best defense in football too quickly. Like, that's all he's really guilty of. If you're a Saints fan today, I think you got to feel really good about that loss. It's not what you wanted, the same way nobody wanted to see the 49ers lose in Baltimore, but it happened, so now you're picking up the pieces. And the pieces are that you were just competing in a scenario that a lot of other teams faded in. Drew Brees, what's the one thing we said? Man, as soon as the 49ers get a stationary target, I think they could really rip the lid off the Saints' offense, and they just made Aaron Rodgers look old, and nope. No. Maybe that's the Matt LaFleur new guy factor that Aaron Rodgers didn't have going for him. But, man, everything that you could have wanted out of Drew Brees and Sean Payton, they had loaded in both barrels, and they shot it at you. They were phenomenal.
Yeah, and they win the game if Kittle doesn't make that play. So they didn't score too early. They scored exactly when it was there for him. And under normal circumstances, playing against a team that doesn't have a tight end who is part transformer, they win. So
I would say, just to jump back slightly, that the difference was Michael Thomas. between Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees. I mean, that's the biggest difference between the options they were given, is Drew Brees has arguably the best receiver in football, and Aaron Rodgers has a cast of, okay.
Michael Thomas is drifting into the one of the best players that you don't talk about enough conversation.
I think he's there. Yeah.
He is phenomenal.
No, he's an extraordinarily talented player. He's strong. He can run all the routes.
He's all NFL. First team all NFL.
Oh, no question. And the one thing that he does to harm the Saints is that I think he's made them forget a bit about Alvin Kamara. I thought Kamara was underused yesterday. And I know that the 49ers had a lot to do with that. But the Saints, when both of those guys are going, are indomitable. And I don't believe the 49ers could beat them if they have both those guys going.
I think one of the things the Niners did really well yesterday is not let Alvin Kamara get going. I mean, 13 rushes, 25 yards, and look, running between the tackles is not his strength, but if you make it a detriment to use the guy, it becomes harder to work him into the game plan, and I think that's what the Niners did. Also,
Latavius Murray was more of a backfield threat yesterday than Kamara was.
I think Latavius Murray, he's not in the... Not in the Michael Thomas conversation,
no.
But I do think he...
Just yesterday.
He's just a guy who gets nothing but disrespect, and every time I've watched him, he's reasonably effective.
He's not a bad running back at all. I think where Kamara wasn't used was out of the backfield throwing to him. They only targeted him six times. And if you want him to basically break your team, you want to have to worry about him sideline to sideline.
Yeah.
That's what I meant by that.
No, that's true. And I also think it's worth mentioning that what Drew Brees did yesterday is wildly impressive, not because he, you know, it's a clean sheet and so all the Saints must have held off the 49ers. No, the Niners' rush was right there all day. Nick Bosa had an excellent game. DeForest Buckner got pressure consistently, and Brees still didn't get sacked and carve them up. And that is what makes him... a first ballot Hall of Famer is he can't run, but he can avoid sacks and carve you up all day.
And that's why I go back to the Kamara point, which was if you're going to try to get rid of the ball quickly, who's better to get rid of it quickly too?
That's fair.
I mean, I get that you target Michael Thomas 15 times because he changes games, but Kamara changes games with a bunch of little paper cuts, and they didn't really employ him as much as I thought they should.
The biggest paper cut given by Alvin Kamara was to his own team yesterday.
Ready, cut.
First down for Drew Brees and company. It's Alvin Kamara looking for a seam. There is no ball's loose. San Francisco's got it. And the first turnover for the 49ers defense. DJ Jones forced it. Buckner recovered it.
It was a big, big moment in the game. Every possession was needed. 888-957-9570 is the number. We do hope to catch up with Michael Irvin, who we're having trouble tracking down today. He must be traveling. Otherwise, getting Michael on the phone is never a problem. If not today, certainly tomorrow with Michael. We do have Cam Inman joining us at 5:30 this afternoon. We've also got Warriors Live tipping off at 6. Dubs back in town. Ja Morant in town with the Memphis Grizzlies. Going to be a good one tonight. Over at Chase Center, as the Warriors are getting a little bit more healthy day by day, game by game. Let's not get ahead of ourselves here. 888-957-9570 is the number. We got open lines for you, courtesy of Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Good to have you here on 95.7 The Game. We're taking your phone calls. We're waiting for Michael Irvin to join us. If not today, certainly later this week. A conversation you do not want to miss. A conversation we don't want to miss, but...
we're missing it.
We might have missed it today. We will hopefully have it for you a little bit later on. 888-957-9570. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. Mr. Unreliable became reliable once again.
Snap is high. The kick is up. And it is.
It means Robbie Gould can stay. No, I'm telling you, man, I doubted it just for a minute. I really did.
You doubted it for weeks.
Look, rightfully so. His track record, his body of work just this year was officially as unimpressive as Adam Vinatieri's body of work just this year is concerning. By the way, Vinatieri, IR, done for the year.
And for the career, I would imagine.
It's got to be it.
Yeah.
Which is an unfortunate end to a pretty impressive career.
Hall of Fame career.
No, this year will not be mentioned when you talk about Vinatieri.
No, I know, but
it doesn't. This year doesn't exist.
All right,
and it is a measure of Frank Reich's sort of acknowledgement of his career that he probably stayed with him longer than he would.
Oh yeah, absolutely. If that was anyone not named Adam Vinatieri performing that way, they'd have been cut 3 games into the season.
Hell, they could have gotten Kai Forbath 2 or 3 times.
Everyone's kicker.
Had it not been Robbie Gould, the same equation probably applies to his production as well.
Could be.
Special teams, been a little bit of a sore spot. Yesterday, the play that you didn't allow against you on special teams might have been the special teams play of the year.
It's a fake. Hill's got it. Looking to throw. Taysom Hill going for it. Interference.
By the way, Taysom Hill, that guy is a headache. I mean, I haven't seen anyone be the, you know, I can be your backup running back. I can be a slot wide receiver. I can be an X or a Y. I can also throw a block for you. I can also be a running back. I can even be a goal line back.
So like, here's my question.
Man, that guy's good.
There are other guys. In fact, I would argue there are guys running all over college with similar skill sets.
Why not?
Why is no one else trying this?
Because I think it's such a game of specialization that the minute you find what you're best at, you want to concentrate on that. And being good over here isn't reason to keep working on it if you're best over here.
Okay, but I'm just saying, if I'm an NFL head coach, not if I'm a college-level Taysom Hill, if I'm an NFL head coach and there's a really good Northern Illinois running quarterback, why am I not giving this a try? If Sean Payton is willing to take a first ballot Hall of Famer who is clearly still capable of doing it at a high level off the field to give you a weird different look with Taysom Hill, why are the Titans or the Dolphins or the whoever that doesn't have a Hall of Fame quarterback throwing some curveballs in?
Because some coaches are better at looking at players and projecting them as pros than others.
But no one else in the league could find somebody to run a package like this?
No, you'll see this now. But until somebody does it, it is technically inconceivable.
So you're just saying he's first and others will follow.
Well, yeah, because there's nothing more imitative than, you know, a sport in which one coach figures something out.
Well, here's the question.
But the Taysom Hill thing, I just want to finish real quick. It's Sean Payton is able to take guys who do one thing and look at them and go, you know what? If I have him do something else, he'll work for me. I mean, it happens rarely. Roger Craig was one of those. He was not a particularly, you know, loved back when he was at Nebraska. But Bill Walsh could see, you know what? He can catch the ball. We can get him out of the backfield. I can make him into something different than he's been. And I think that's the trick when you are not only a great play caller, but a good player personnel guy.
Yeah.
I think Peyton is one of those.
Just the way I'm thinking about it is if I'm the Vikings or the Eagles, like, why would I not want a change of pace to throw in there to show people different looks?
All I know is that no one ever, ever, ever caught a ball the way that Odell Beckham Jr. caught that ball on that Monday Night Football game for the New York Giants.
And now it happens once a week.
And now I see it in high school games.
Yeah, you're right.
Taysom Hill is someone that we really never saw before, probably wasn't ordered off of any menu, but when you look at it, you can't help but be interested. And I'm wondering if, you know, will Shohei Ohtani open up a new way to develop baseball players who've got the ability to pitch it and hit the ton off the ball, too?
He's got an arm surgery that says probably not.
Yeah. Text line brought up the name that's been in my head this whole time, and it's Tim Tebow. I mean, not now, because he's apparently going to be a Met next year, but if someone had thought of this
I mean, the same. Go ahead.
2 years into Tim Tebow's career, think of how valuable that could have been in a Taysom Hill role, what Tim Tebow might have been able to do.
Tim Tebow should have been the H-back.
But
should have been an H-back. He's the best goal line back in the history of the SEC conference.
Let's not forget, though, he didn't want to do that.
That's right.
He wanted to be a quarterback. He wanted to be thought of as a traditional quarterback. So he was given a number of opportunities to be a traditional quarterback and failed everywhere because his arm was erratic.
Yeah. We ran out of Tebow time.
I mean, more complicated than that. This only works, A, if you have somebody who can do it, but it doesn't work if he doesn't want.
Yeah, you need a willing participant.
Has not been a glorious year for the Niners special teams. Their coordinator, Richard Hightower, coaching up that unit to be ready for that fake punt, that's as big of a coaching moment as any coordinator has had. That was huge to survive that. Robert Saleh did not have a glorious day. It was not a defensive afternoon to remember. Richard Sherman.
It's frustrating more because of simple plays. You know, things we've gone over. It's not like they beat us with a bunch of trick misdirection plays and they just got us. These are day one football plays that we just got to execute better. But give credit to them. Drew saw him. He found the people that were open. He made the plays. Sean called him. So you got to give them credit. They had a good plan coming in, but we got to execute better. We got to have a better plan. We got to execute our plan better.
There's a lot of defensive know-how that the 49ers have. There is probably just as much, if not more, offensive know-how going on that sideline than whatever Robert Saleh is doing with his young, inexperienced group that is way ahead of the curve that we thought they'd be behind.
Yeah. I mean, it's the weird thing about all of that is it every time I hear the word Robert Saleh, the only thing that goes through my head is, yeah, this is the guy everybody wanted fired last year because he wasn't smart enough and he wasn't creative enough and he couldn't make anything happen.
Why won't he blitz?
Yeah, why won't he do all these things? And the answer to that is the answer that should always come to everybody's mind first is maybe he doesn't have the players to do it. Because you know what? Defensive coordinators don't win with bad players. They win with good players. And coaches in general, that's the rule. Nobody has ever taken a bad roster and created so many weird things that you suddenly become a good team. I cannot remember a single time in any sport where a bad team has threatened to win a championship and only did it because their guy's smarter than everybody else.
Coaches can only affect things by degrees, right? I mean,
yes.
At best.
And small ones.
Small degrees.
Let me tell you what we're going to do. We're officially going to start our 5 o'clock hour early. That way we can spend an awful lot of it with the playmaker, Michael Irvin.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.